103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Mental Wealth with Brian Green. Good afternoon and welcome to another of the programmes. Today I'm talking HGVs. I'm with the European Professional Drivers Association, and they've done a new survey called the HGV Professional Driver Health and Wellness Survey 2017. The results are just coming out at the moment. They're not all out yet, but we're going to get a brief kind of introduction to some of the results that will come out when the full report is published. I'm talking with Barry Lyons and Joe Doyle of the association today. Hi, lads.
How are you doing, Brian?
Good to see you.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Tell us a day in the life of a truck driver that you represent that leads you to need to do a wellness and health survey to see how they're getting on. What's typically going on? What were we expecting before you did this survey?
The role of the professional truck driver is broken into many different facets. There's like national, local, international. We specifically looked at the role of the long distance driver. So he'd be more our national and international driver for HGV and for coach drivers. We had been listening to various feedback from CPC courses. That's the professional competence course that drivers have to undertake to manage their vehicles. So we'd heard back that the age profile was quite high. We'd heard like 54 was the average age for a commercial vehicle driver. And we were aware of a number of incidents that happened where drivers had heart attack at the wheel and died. That was happened in the early part of 16, and then we had another coach driver having a stroke at the wheel. So we were kind of concerned, this concerned us, so we said, well, okay, why don't we put together a health survey and see what the actual facts are, if we could ascertain them. So we approached the UCD, Dr. Cornish in UCD, and she provided us with a template that she had used for a survey they had done on shift workers. So we were basically trying to address nutrition and the actual lifestyle, nutritional lifestyle of the driver. We contacted the RSA. They were very supportive of the survey, and the HSA were very supportive of it. And then we contacted the Irish Association of Counselling and Psychotherapists. We wanted them to be involved just to help us formulate some questions that may be of help to give us a better picture of the role of that particular driver. So we did that. We carried out the survey over 2017. We've been at it now since March we started. And we kind of finished up the last few in the end of October, early part of November, about 3 weeks ago. And we would hope to have the results completely analysed in early January. But so far, what we've got back is kind of what we were expecting. The role, for the most part, is all shifts moving around. The driver doesn't have a fixed shift pattern. And this has an effect on his lifestyle. The driver, the average age so far, we reckon is around 45.
Which is a problem, is it?
Well, it's actually younger than we had anticipated, because what was coming out of driver CPC was there was about 54. In the UK, it's 54. So we were feeling maybe it should have been a bit higher. But it seems to be that the long distance driver, the younger driver is more attracted to that. So a lot of information came about. We brought along, under the survey, as part of the survey, we did the driver's blood pressure, we did the blood glucose, and we did the BMI. And unfortunately, Brian, now there were four cases where they had to be referred to a doctor on blood pressure. Yeah. So it's a serious enough situation that these HGV drivers find themselves in. And this is purely as a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding on diet, nutrition, general health and well-being. Yeah.
Joe, you're a driver yourself.
Yeah.
And you're in the association. Is this this isn't shocking findings to you, but it's hard evidence on what people might have perceived to be the problem?
Well, one of the big things is the dietary problem in relation to any sort of health that we would have. I mean, if you go into a services, you'd probably buy a hamburger for €5. You pay €7 or €8 for a salad. So drivers traditionally go for fast foods, high energy foods, sugars, bars of chocolate, and these are all borne out in the survey. And most of their snacking increases when they're driving. Burgers, coffees, high energy drinks, all of these things are predominantly used by drivers because short, quick energy fields.
It just helps you there too, Joe, that in the results it's looking like 89% of the drivers that were surveyed were either overweight or obese.
89%.
Yeah. And again, the services do provide salad bars and whatever, but as a driver you're going to go in, the last, you don't have any attractiveness towards a salad or a cold meal. So we don't have, and we've noticed in services, and I have, particularly out in Europe, that the standards are better, but the costs in relation to drivers buying healthy option food is too expensive for them, particularly with the rate of pay that they're on. And that's another issue that we found, that when drivers are on a daily rate, they're trying to cut corners, save money, eat cheap food, eat bars of chocolate, skip meals, and all of those things are coming out now in the survey.
The nutrition is a very important thing, and they're not trying to diminish it, but it would it be because other things aren't right about the job? Where they get to rest, what meals they can get when they're on a boat travelling across the sea, are all these kind of, you know, where the service stops are, what they offer, when they're not open, are they part of the problem as well?
Well, I travelled on a ferry here not too long ago out to Cherbourg, and when I got onto the ferry, I was issued my room, and then I was allocated a cabin with somebody that I didn't know, and I was going to share that with them for 17 or 18 hours, which I found a little bit offensive. Then the quality of food that was offered to us was nothing short of appalling. The drivers had one area where they could select food from, and the ordinary passengers had another selection. The ordinary passengers had a wider selection of food and a better selection of food.
More healthy.
So we'd say we had the drivers, in the driver's cant restaurant, there was four items that you could choose from, and then in the normal passengers to be seven or eight at least. There was, I think, six hot food options I counted, and then two salad type meals, pastas and salads, so they're not readily available to drivers, and then drivers don't want them because there's no attractiveness to them, so it's something that's thrown together. So that's where I would struggle with people when we go into these services looking for food that is not made attractive to us. You have to go into a shop and look for something, and it's more expensive to eat healthy. I think that's part of the problem as well.
And then it's not helped by the fact that the job is very sedentary. You're sitting down for hours and hours and hours, up to 15 hours a day in a shift, and not getting very far. It's also a lonely kind of station as well, because you're kind of on your own. Yeah. How are their communications with others helped? Or, you know, are they, you know, kind of down and depressed through loneliness? Is that coming out at all?
Well, we don't have any evidence of that, but we do know that they're lone workers. They are out on their own, these long distance drivers. We know that. But for the most part, like when they come in off the road in the evening or at a time of day to take their daily rest, that they would have access to facilities where they could socialise. In terms of just talking to other people, have a coffee with somebody, watch a bit of TV. There are service areas in the state here and in other states that give access to that. Like our own Topaz services here in Cashel, in Kill, in Monaghan. They'll provide a level of services to drivers, one of the best levels of services to our drivers here. However, our main ones on the main network, motorway network, like Apple Green, they don't provide that level of service. And there are three key things that people require in order to maintain a healthy lifestyle. They need to have proper nutritional intake. So, and to do that, they need a bit of knowledge. They need to know what to eat and when to eat. And Joe refers to it has to be appetizing. You know, it has to be warm. They're looking for a little bit of comfort as well, like anybody else, a warm meal. They have to have adequate rest. You know, the body needs to rest and rest properly. And if we just look at rest in itself, one of the biggest problems, you know, in terms of road safety is fatigue, driver fatigue. You've heard about it. The RSA promote that regularly, you know, and telling people to stop, sip coffee and take a break. In the case of the driver, it's evident from the shifting work pattern that fatigue has a bigger influence on the driver, that he can get caught up fatigued very quickly and unaware of it. Because when he parks up in these certain areas, you know, there's a lot of traffic movement at night time or in the day. So he's trying to sleep and he's being disturbed. So he's not getting like his 9 hours sleep. And that has come out in the survey as well. We specifically asked about sleep. So we can see that there's an issue with sleep. We can see that there's an issue with nutrition. And then we can see there's an issue with exercise. They're the three key things you need to have a healthy mind and body, is food, good quality food, proper rest and exercise. And they're not getting the exercise. We can see that. The majority of them are not a member of any sports club or any gym or anything like that.
I hear that you're reaching these guys through Facebook very successfully, that the messages you send out are getting huge reach. Is that the way to get to them with healthy messages and ideas what they can do when they stop up and you know, go for a walk and where the good services are? Can you inform them of these things?
It'd be great to be able to inform them of good services, but the services aren't there for them. Even though Topaz, we'll say, do their best, we don't have the level of service that the actual driver requires here. He needs to exercise. He needs support in that. So somebody needs to inform him. He needs proper nutrition. Someone needs to inform him. And there was a research done in the mid-90s in Sweden into this, and they had an intervention where they went in and they trained the staff in the service areas to inform drivers as to what was nutritionally good for them to eat. And that the results on that were very encouraging. So we need to do something like that. We need to work with the service providers and see, can we get them to disseminate the information to the driver and make them aware of good food choices and provide leisure facilities and provide showers that are acceptable to today's standards, what a person would expect.
Joe, tell us about the standards of showering and wash-up facilities that are available for drivers on the road.
Well, I've been down in France, Belgium, Germany in the last few months, and when you go down to them, you'd have proper washrooms where a driver can go in with his bag, his shower gear, change of clothes, he's a toilet, mirrors, wash hand basin, sinks, hooks, proper shower, they're cleaned by an attendant. So they're all provided. They are not provided here in Ireland. They are provided in some services in the UK. But I find that when you're out in Europe, that there's a better service towards truck drivers. So those things would be there for drivers out in Europe. Now, in some places you will pay for them. Some places they're free. In fact, I've done one in Germany where you pay €10 to park overnight. There's an attendant there, and the €10 then used for as a voucher in the restaurant where you can get, oh, you went in and you can get healthy options, and the food is cooked for you there and then. So those options are not here, and that's, I think, a reflection on what has happened with drivers in Ireland, that they're not being provided any services by anybody, and they're just a token gesture, and that's part of the reason why people aren't going into the industry. So, you know, when you have to use services, and as a fellow advised me many years ago, always bring a spare toilet roll with you in case you have to jump over the ditch. We're in 2017. That shouldn't be happening today. You know, people are giving out about certain different things that are happening all over the place, but yet nobody's turning around and saying, well, what are we providing? Or what are we doing to ensure that this industry is being serviced by the state bodies in a proper fashion? So I think that would be, I think.
Well, it brings in the role of the European Professional Drivers Association. We have a very important part to play as the voice of the driver, because the employers in certain cases can't, their hands are tied in relation to what they can say to their own customers. Like an example of that would be one of the big distribution centres here in Kildare had a toilet facility out at the security hut, which was about 100 metres from where the drivers were actually unloading the trailers. And the drivers would have to go into that facility, into that distribution centre, unload the trailer, reload the trailer with empty containers and then head off. Toilet facility was a toilet like, you know, a metal bowl with no lid, a wash hand basin that gave you the soap, the hot water, the blow dry at the same time. You know, it was totally inadequate for the needs of a driver. And it was one cubicle. You know, you would certainly not let your any lady into it. There's no doubt about that. Like, it just wasn't. It wasn't appropriate.
Drivers are out on the road on a job for, you know, a few days, up to a week, up to a few weeks. They get to, in these long distance cabs, sleep there. Are they sleeping there all the time? Are they getting a good night's sleep in a decent bed at all?
No, what's the problem at the moment is that they're staying in the cab, and there's regulations in certain countries that They read the regulations as saying that the driver, if taking a 40 or 5 hour break every weekend, he shouldn't take it in the cab. He must get out of the cab. In this country here, we can stay in the cab. And some drivers, their preference is to stay in the cab. But that's only if you have the facilities beside you, like, you know, food, exercise, toilet facilities, if they're there, you know. It's important that those facilities are there.
I'm going to presume that, you know, with the race to the bottom, with the way contracts and work is done and permanent employment and, you know, self-employment and various different things and cut on the costs, that there isn't the few bob to check into a hotel at an end point and use the facilities of a hotel and have a swim and have a, you know, am I dreaming here or am I?
No, but it's important to say, you know, the EU generate these regulations, and the one regulation we have there is the driver's hours regulation, and it clearly states in that, like, at the outset of that regulation, what it's all about. And it just says it's there to ensure the driver's health, ensure the health and safety of other road users, and to ensure fair competition. So into that regulation, you can put in anything. If you wanted to say, well, drivers should have to stay in a hotel and they must be accommodated by their employer, well, that's what it would have to be.
There's a big, you're talking about the race to the bottom. I think in relation to drivers, the rates of pay for drivers have become very poor and are slowly starting to increase. Now we're at a stage where people are bringing in workers from other countries to drive their trucks. I know one company now are bringing in South African people from South Africa. Now, what I find strange with that is that the driver market hasn't been exhausted here. That's just, again, to bring down and keep down the rate to pay for drivers. A driver will not pay, if a driver's on a daily rate of pay, and you ask a company, how many hours a day is a day, how many hours are involved in a day for a daily rate, they won't tell you. So, some drivers are actually driving for below minimum wage. And it just happens to work out that way. And most companies will not pay a driver a decent overnight allowance or an overnight allowance at all. So you're not going to fork out 50 or 60 euro to stay in a hotel if you're not being paid it. So if you're being paid, an example of what some drivers are getting in for internationals, between, I suppose, 125 and 145 euros a day, that's what they get paid. Now, how long the day is, I don't know. It will vary on what sort of tasks they have to carry out. But you're not going to pay half of that to stay in a hotel. You'll use it for a shower. You'll use some money for a shower. You'll go into a place and you'll say, whatever it is, €3 for a shower. And then you're buying your meals. And most drivers will have some sort of cooking ring with them to try and reduce their costs. So the payments are not attractive. Most people drive because they love being out on the road. They like driving. They like being alone in a cab. As Barry said earlier, they love to sit in the evening and spill diesel, as we'd say, have chatting with other like-minded colleagues, because or talk about their trucks and keeping their trucks clean and putting fog horns or whatever it is and lights and whatever, talk about all those truck shows. But that's what they like to do. That's their lives. And that's why they're in the industry.
But if conditions stay as they are, younger drivers are not going to come in. Drivers are not going to let their daughters or their sons get into the business if it remains as bad. And that's going to mean that there's going to be less drivers and everything's moved onto the road for moving goods.
Brian, that's going to affect everybody. That's going to affect everybody in society. What we need to do is the job, it's a great job. If you're a truck driver, like, you love that job. It's just a great job. So what we need to do is, like, promote the job as being a good job. And I'll just bring you back to that distribution centre in Kildare. When we approached, the EPDA approached the management of the distribution centre and said, like, are you aware that the facilities here aren't good enough for drivers and that you don't provide any refreshment, like water inside in the building, that they could have a drink of water after spending an hour and a half working in there? They said we were completely unaware that it was an oversight on our part. And within hours, they had it resolved.
So there is a listening ear.
Yeah, there is, of course, but we don't have a common voice. You know, the industry needs a common voice. It needs people out there working with the best interests of everybody concerned. Like, we need to make the economy efficient. We need to make it work, but we need to make it fair for everybody. And at the moment, the driver doesn't have an input into how the economy's run. Into the road transport industry.
How is that going to change? So you're listening to the drivers. Who's going to be listening to you? Are you getting?
Well, hopefully, like Transport Infrastructure Ireland would listen to us. Like, here's an example. Here's an example. We wrote to Leo Varadkar some time ago when he was Minister of Transport, and we raised the issue of road signage. Like, not many people, not many of your listeners will know this, and maybe some of your professional drivers may not know this, but a HGV can't drive in the outside lane of a motorway. Can't.
That's a new one, is it?
No, that's been forever. You can't drive in the outside lane of a motorway. Now, you see a lot of HGVs driving on the outside lane of a motorway. You know, if you go down the M7 from the Ball and Nace down to Dunkettle roundabout, you'll see plenty of trucks moving out in the outside lane to overtake slower moving vehicles, but they're not allowed. There's a penalty point for it and there's a fine, an on the spot fine for that.
If I'm driving in my car and I'm in the inside, but I come across a slip road that's entering onto the motorway, yeah. I move out to let stuff in at the same pace as me.
Yeah.
You're saying that a truck can't even
can't
do that?
Can't do that, no. You can't drive in the outside lane of a motorway. That's the rule. So we wrote to Leo and we said, look, could you get a sign put up? Just put up a sign saying that drivers, HGVs can't go in the outside lane. And then car drivers would be aware. Make everybody aware of that rule. No, it would cause sign clutter on the motorway. That was the end of it. We couldn't get that sign put up. And we've tried on numerous occasions to get the Department of Transport to address this issue. And again, too, partly our fault. We don't have the resources. We don't have, you know, we've no funding. We're all self-funded here. It's all of our own time. We're all volunteers working in the organisation. We still have a living to live. Like Joe there will be out in the continent. He'll be gone for a week and you won't see him for a week and a half. And then he comes home. He's his family to deal with, do live life. And then you're expecting them to help you out in the association. So it's hard for us at the moment. We would love more support from the RSA. And they have been supportive of us. There's no doubt about that. Like, they helped us out with this survey. The HSA, Deirdre Sinnott, helped us out in the HSA. So they see the benefit of an organisation such as the EPDA, where they can actually communicate the issues that are beneficial to everybody. You know, everybody is a winner here. You know, if we can identify the issues of concern for drivers, resolve them like we did with the central distribution centre, it was easily resolved. It wasn't a problem once people knew. And then build on that and encourage people into the industry. We need to get people into the industry. There's a couple of reasons why they're out of it. Some might be mechanisation, like, you know, there were helpers in trucks. So a kid started off, went for a spin with his dad in the truck, all of a sudden got into it. Did I want to be one of these? Now you can't take children in the trucks, which most companies won't allow. Passengers, that's it. That came in the early 80s, 90s, no passengers allowed. And then we mechanised, a lot of vehicles would have had a helper. So he would take the load off when the driver got to the destination, take the stuff off. Now we gave the driver a tail lift and a pallet truck.
So that's like an apprenticeship has been disappeared.
Oh, yeah. We don't have an apprenticeship for driver. We have very few recognised apprenticeships in the state here. I think we have about 25 or 6 recognised apprenticeships. Where go to Austria or Germany, it might be 230 or 250 recognised apprenticeships.
You mentioned a survey is coming out in January. It's the HGV Professional Driver Health and Wellness Survey 2017. It'll be 2018 as we get all the results. Just to finish up, and it's something I notice quite a lot getting mentioned in the media, and it's the future of driving. And in this particular question, large truck driving, that it's going automated. There's going to be driverless trucks bringing goods to and from. What's the association's take on that? Is that going to wipe out the driver, or are drivers safe?
Drivers are really, really safe. You know, the modern day vehicle, like from 2015 on, the advancements in technology in the cab are colossal. You know, we've got a whole range of systems built into the vehicles now to make them much, much safer, make it safer for the driver and make it safer for other road users. Now, the technology with that brings a certain level of skill sets that are required by the driver. And, you know, it's that the drivers need to acquire. They need to understand, like, how these systems work and why they work. In relation to the question that you hear, you know, oh, there'll be driverless trucks. Brian, there won't be driverless trucks for a very, very long time. Like, I'll give you an example. If we were going to deliver washing machines to houses around the town today, who's going to take the washing machine out of the back of the truck and bring it into the person's house? And when they don't want to put it in the kitchen, they want to put it in the washroom, or they don't want the TV in the bedroom, they want it in the bathroom. Who's going to do all that, take away the old washing machine or TV, take away the packaging, recycle the packaging in the back of the vehicle, get ready for the next delivery, make the phone call, ring the person, will you be there, will you be back in half an hour or 20 minutes? So it's not going to happen for a very long time.
But if the truck drives itself, is there a possibility that it'll be that old assistance that they don't have at the moment will be the attendee at the truck to do all those kind of things at a house?
No, there will be an attendee there. The driver will be there. There's only very few places where the vehicle won't will be completely on its own. And they're currently working at the moment today. There are trucks going in and out of mines, tipper trucks hauling stone and material and minerals in and out of mines, and there's no drivers in them. They've been monitored from, somebody's monitoring them and making sure they, you know, they don't get a puncture or they have a mechanical failure or a light doesn't work or whatever. They're monitoring all that. We'll have similar. What we're looking here is for the driverless vehicle is for efficiencies and safety. You know, so we have platooning. They're currently testing across Europe at the moment and in the UK. This is a fuel saving arrangement, but it's going to be interesting to see how it actually plays out in the real world. When you have a line of five or six trucks heading one behind the other within a couple of inches of one another, and somebody comes from that slip road that you came out of, who's going to let who out? Who's going to let who in? So it's going to be interesting to see how all that pans out.
An algorithm, probably. To finish up then, Joe, let's say, following the survey, what one thing would you say to drivers of heavy goods vehicles that they can do for their health and their mental health?
For their personal health, I think a lot of it is kind of preparing for your trip. And a lot of drivers do. They shop. And shop efficiently, but it's trying to get away from the fast food and the whole ideology of everything being done on a quick and short basis. That their day isn't, it's spreading out the day, it's taking the pressure away from yourself, and that's partly, and stopping when you should be stopping. A lot of drivers are pressurized from back office to be in particular places through traffic delays, shipping delays, and it's about stopping. It's about taking your breaks. It's about looking at what you're eating. It's about trying to eat properly. We won't do it. We won't change the mindset overnight. But what I try to do when I'm out there is to bring something more healthy with me. Bananas, apples, oranges, nuts. Nuts in particular. And eat them, snack while I'm driving. So there'd be some of the areas that I try to do. If you can pass it on, maybe. You know, there's other guys out there who will help us with that too.
Sounds like good advice for everybody that's listening. And finally, Barry Lyons, European Professional Drivers Association. The survey's out in January. Can we have you back on the radio maybe in 2018 when the survey's out?
Sure, we'd love to come back, Brian. Thanks very much for having us in today as well. But we'd love to come back. Yeah, the information that we have gained from the survey will be very beneficial to everybody. Yeah, it'd be great.
Thanks very much, lads.
Thanks very much, Brian. Appreciate
Thanks, Brian. It. Thanks a million.
My thanks to Joe and Barry from the European Professional Drivers Association, and we look forward to the full results of the survey in January. This has been Mental Wealth on Dublin City FM. If you want to get in touch, email mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. We're back next Tuesday at 12:30. Until then, have a great week. Take care. Stay safe. Bye-bye.